Hi, my name is Ebony Joy. Welcome to Solidarity Economy Shorts, a collaboration between New Economy Coalition and Cooperative Journal Media. Solidarity Economy Shorts are conversations with frontline organizations and individuals that are putting solidarity economy principles into practice. They're using different strategies to build an economic system where communities are meeting their own needs outside of capitalism. New Economy Coalition is a membership representing the solidarity economy ecosystem in the United States. Their members are actively working across economic sectors to shift from individuality and capitalism to cooperation and solidarity. Some of the New Economy members will be featured on this podcast to explore topics like land justice, cooperation, arts and culture, resource mobilization, and more. We'll share lessons learned, practices, and how you can engage in this liberatory vision. As you listen, you're invited to feel into your body. When do you sense constriction? When do you feel light and expansive? We hope these shorts can be a reminder that we don't have to wait for the future we dream of. It is here now, waiting for us to participate. The Black Solidarity Economy Fund, or BSEF, was created by New Economy Coalition to resource, convene, and uplift the work of the Black Solidarity Economy movement. The fund is managed by their member-led working group that has the autonomy to make decisions about who receives the grant and how much is awarded. Since 2020, they have redistributed $730,000 to Black Solidarity Economy groups across the nation. In this episode, I speak with former grantees and members of the working group, Aaron Backus from the Maternal Health Equity Collaborative and Joy Bryant from Symbodied. They share about their solidarity economy organizing in maternal health care and agriculture, as well as the ancestral wisdom that informs their work. They talk about the collective grant-making process and how it felt to shift from grantee to grant-maker. We also delve into the current barriers to weaving a Black Solidarity Economy network, the future they envision for a robust Black Solidarity Economy, and some practical ways to activate this vision. Before the interview begins, Sharday Nabors, the Resource Redistribution Director at New Economy Coalition, grounds us in defining the solidarity economy, what the Black Solidarity Economy Fund is, the intention for starting it, and their plans for expansion.
At its core, the solidarity economy is an organizing framework that is revolutionary, democratic, and anti-capitalist. It seeks to create and sustain economies that move in opposition to our current extractive economy and its community center and aims for collective liberation. The term itself came to the U.S. from the World Social Forum in Brazil, but the practices have existed long before the term. Solidarity economy frameworks are rooted in indigenous practices that have always existed and resisted capitalism. Within the context of Black communities, both in the U.S. and throughout the diaspora, we see solidarity economies in things like SUSUs, co-ops, community organizing, and mutual aid efforts. We're familiar with like the grandmas and the aunties who create ecosystems of care, taking care of the kids, cooking for the block, even saving money to buy property or provide help to single mothers. SUSUs are something that come all the way from the motherland and describe communities coming together to save collectively and redistribute resources to individuals. So as Black folks in the U.S. and around the world have been seen as a commodity and essentially used to build our current extractive economic systems, Black folks have always created alternatives that disrupt and resist capitalism. So historical gatekeeping from employment and education have essentially required Black communities to build ecosystems of our own that not only help us survive, but thrive in spite of violent oppression. The Black Solidarity Economy Fund was created in 2020 when we were all kind of in the middle of this cultural movement when Black folks were demanding to be seen and heard. So Black staff at New Economy Coalition had been identifying some anti-Blackness within the network. You know, it exists in a lot of different spaces, so no surprise. Staff reached out to membership and essentially asked what was needed for Black folks in the network. So BCEF was then created as a space to resource Black leadership within the solidarity economy movement. One of the foundational pieces of the Black Solidarity Economy Fund is that it is a member-led space. And when we do our grant making, those decisions are made by a lot of the folks that are also doing this work deeply. So informed decisions made by the folks that are most directly impacted by the work is super important to not only the way that BCEF does grant making, but the way that NEC does grant making overall. In the first round of funding, we moved about 150,000 to Black-led projects, and since then, we've moved over 730,000 to Black-led solidarity economy projects. BCEF has quickly grown beyond a fund and grant-making vehicle. In 2023, we hosted a strategic planning retreat in Oakland where we discussed expanding our work to include programming, convenings, trainings, and more. We are actually currently raising funds to support an in-person convening for BCEF grantees, NEC members, and other movement partners this summer. We'll be gathering in Durham, North Carolina, to engage in discussion around Black radical democracy. And we hope to continue to strengthen relationships and build a shared vision for Black solidarity economy work in our network. We also are going to open our fourth round of funding in the fall of 2024, where we hope to move between $200,000, $300,000, no biggie, to more Black-led organizing. And our grantees are continuing to do great work to support alternative economies and Black communities. And we're hoping to support them beyond the monetary to continue to grow the capacity of the fund.
Now that we've received some context from Sharday, we're going to transition to welcoming Aaron and Jory to the podcast. Hi, Aaron and Jory. Thank you so much for saying yes to teaching us about the work you are doing within the Solidarity Economy movement and specifically for the Black Solidarity Economy Fund. Let's start with the initiatives that brought you to the fund. Aaron, you're a member of the Maternal Health Equity Collaborative, and you all created a collective care fund. I would love for you to share what that is and what sparked its inception.
Yes, so thank you for having me. The Maternal Health Equity Collaborative is made up of multiple doula and birth work organizations and parent support organizations in Central Texas. So basically, our staff is the people providing birth support. My organization, Black Mamas ATX specifically, is one of the ones among us who prioritize serving pregnant Black women too, you know? So as like the caregivers for the caregivers, we kind of wanted to start a fund for ourselves because, as y'all probably know, nonprofits don't always have the resources to be able to offer benefits that may just come naturally to other profit models of, business and everything. So our collective care fund started as a way for us to be able to provide for each other in times where resources we might need might not necessarily be found within the individual nonprofits we work at that make up the collaborative, such as maternity care, maternity leave for ourselves.
Yes, I was just about to ask you, what are some of the things that people have used the care fund for?
Yes. So we were able to fund maternity leave for two members. We also helped a member who was experiencing a little bit of housing insecurity. We were able to help them with their rent for a month. So it kind of serves as kind of like an FMLA, but extended just to cover whatever gaps may arise, that one of the members may need.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And Jory, I also want to learn about Symbodied and the work that y'all are doing and what sparked its creation.
Yeah, Symbodied was, it was created to, it was really out of a need of working in a lot of different parts of the food industry. And I worked in kitchens for a very long time. Like majority of my life I spent working in kitchens, and I had gone through this long story of, kind of ancestrally being around food in our community in very different iterations of whether it was through my grandparents or working at this, kind of like a nonprofit in our community that did a lot of feeding and things of that nature. And eventually going into culinary school, and out of culinary school, I got into farming. And when you're in culinary school and you're in the food industry, you actually don't learn a lot about the agricultural space, and vice versa. Like many agrarians don't know about what actually happens in the food industry on that side as well. And I wanted to it initially start out me just wanting to help these two components kind of work together, but I s started seeing like the economic failures amongst Black people who are farmers and Black people who work in the food industry and all different varying levels. And I was trying to figure out like what was causing this disparity in like some of these spaces I was working in. And so part of me also at one point in time doing this journey got really interested around the time actually of Trayvon Martin's murder. I was It kind of put me back into the space of like, you're just thinking about the industry, but what about your community and the food disparity those communities are shaping? And during that time of community engagement, a mentor of mine, we were working on a project around history. And once I started looking at the food industry from a historical place, I started seeing like, okay, this is why the food system works the way it does and why these disparities are like this. Like, it's a system rooted in enslavement. It still has a lot of tendencies surrounding that type of oppression as far as like the type of, one thing I used to tell people, like, you can't go in a bank and yell at a teller, or at least you shouldn't. But people feel like they can go to a restaurant and yell at a waitress, like, and why do we think that? Why is that ingrained in our system that like, this is a place where I can express this type of anger. Like, where did that come from? Who were the people originally doing that job? Anyway, and once I started looking at the history of it, and the systemic parts of it that were creating this disparity, I really wanted to address like the economic implications surrounding it. And so I really wanted to take a deep dive and look into like, what is it that our economic system does that causes these Black and brown and indigenous folks to struggle so much trying to maintain, businesses that are around trying to feed people, specifically. Whether it's, an open air market or so on and so forth. So that's what that encouraged me to do. And then we started looking at alternative models. So the cooperative understanding and, there's a lot of information out there around cooperatives, and one thing that I would say is that like what we have found is that like worker-owned cooperatives that center the laborers are the most equitable, and it's going to get you close to something sustainable that further from exploitation. And that's what we do. We focus on the people who are doing the work, the farmers, the growers, and then we build that way.
I love how both of your works, Aaron and Jory, that they're both connected to taking care of the people that are like at the foundation of our well-being, people that are growing our food, the one that are helping to birth our babies and care for them after, the ones that usually don't receive the utmost care in our system. They're actually usually at the bottom of the class, quote unquote. But I think through the models that you all are having of empowering them through these models of care and cooperation are so essential to them, like realizing their power and having autonomy in these systems that otherwise aren't rooted in care. And I know that you all applied for the Black Solidarity Economy Fund, and then you ended up working within the committee. So I'm curious what your role is at the fund.
Yes, so I'm a pretty new member to BCEF and the NEC. We just applied last summer and or last year, and we're kind of pulled in the summer during their retreat, kind of oriented to what BCEF has going on. And since then, you know, from attending the meetings and things, I found out about the grant making group that is a part of BCEF. And so I was really eager to learn about that side, because within the MHEC and their Black Mamas ATX, I serve as a grant manager. So it was really nice to be on the other side of that and see what that process was like. And I really appreciate BCEF's initiative for wanting to put to invest in the Black community. Like, I feel like that was something that really aligned with me as a grant writer. So yeah, the roles I play are really a member and then continuing to be part of the grant making team.
Yeah, after being a recipient and then, you know, wanting to, like, if someone has received this grant in the past, wanting to be a part of providing that opportunity and giving back in that way. And really, you know, learning about how do we collectively think about solidarity economy amongst Black people. I think that was a big part of the grant. And for me, that was kind of like something that I really wanted to think through and learn from some of the other people who had been around the space longer than I have. It was a space that had a discussion about, like, well, you know, people are practicing solidarity economy, not necessarily articulating it that way. Might not necessarily know it's called solidarity economy or think about it that way. Like, they had that discussion in real time with other Black people and, you know, talk about, like, yeah, like, how do we like recognize the genius that's being practiced that's not necessarily falling into these categories that are kind of in labels that have been placed on them, and make sure that we give credit when credit is due. You know, and if we see something and somebody just, like, you know, wasn't really practicing solidarity economy, like, how can we pull them in and show them what it might all really be about too, as well? Like, it don't gotta be you ain't doing that right. You know, you ain't gotta son nobody, but you can really just be like, hey, like, you know, this is what it's meant, and this is what it's looked like in history when Black people are practicing this way.
Yeah. Yeah, there's such a spectrum to the way that people are practicing the solidarity economy. I think that no one is doing it 100%, especially because we still live within capitalism. And so we're trying to create these other systems within those confines. And I also wanted to piggyback on what you were saying about, like, Black people not necessarily using the solidarity economy as a way of describing their work, but that they're doing it inherently, and that, like, yeah, perhaps that's also why some of the spaces are not necessarily for have a lot of Black people in them, a lot of the solidarity economy spaces, because they are not connecting to that language, or this culture in the space isn't welcoming. So I think that it's so important that y'all are intentionally creating this network, and that the network is being expanded by former grantees, because I think it's really necessary for grants to be informed by the people that are receiving them. Connecting back to the inherentness of Black people practicing the solidarity economy, I always say that the solidarity economy is ancestral, it's not new. And so I'm curious how some of this inherent wisdom of solidarity informs your collective model and practices.
Yes, so at the MHEC, a lot of us are in tune with, you know, honoring that ancestral wisdom. I think our group was kind of an example of people who didn't necessarily refer to ourselves as a solidarity economy at first, but we're doing it anyways because of that, because of our desire to kind of reflect back what we knew had been passed down culturally, you know, ways of caring for each other and supporting each other. And so I just pulled up our community pillars, which are birth worker sustainability, power building and organizing, holistic care, and thriving communities. And so we collectively decided on this, which I think is not, you know, capitalism is very individualistic, where I would say the solidarity economy is not. So even having that practice of shared power and decision making and how we're going to govern ourselves and coming up with these pillars was an example of that. And then the pillars themselves, prioritizing our own wellness and well-being, like, now we're in here, is it like, get all the money and do all the things, you know, it's just, how can we make sure that by taking care of each other and ourselves, that we're able to continue taking care of our community?
That's fire. So for us, a unique component to our work is food. And a good portion of our work is looking at, like, how is our system colonized and what does a decolonial system look like? And so, like, we have a particular way that we go about engaging in it. So, like, we always start with popular education, which is, like, when we go into a community. So even a community of growers, but most people don't think about growers as a community, but they are. I would suggest anybody that wants to start a farm that you do not farm by yourself or in isolation, right? And so so when we go into that space, decolonial, we're looking at, like, what's the historical background of this community? Like, who are these African people here? And what's the majority of these people in this community? And so through popular education and research and so on and so forth, we kind of, like, just share with the community, like, here are the people you come from. Here's the majority of this community is made up of these folks from this part of Africa. And in this part of Africa, this is the economic structure that they had pre-colonially. And this is how this worked in agriculture for them. And it kind of just takes you out of this capitalistic structure, even though you still got to pay bills, you still got to do that. But you're thinking about yourself ancestral, you're thinking about yourself, you know, pre-colonial, you think about yourself outside of that space. And, you know, how can we incorporate some of those things in the way that we go about structuring the co-op as we want it to be in the future.
Yeah, that reminds me of George Washington Carver and how he would travel to different farming communities to educate the farmers and give out these bulletins of ways that they can grow regeneratively and also like culturally appropriate crops. And so, yeah, I think meeting people where they're at is so important and like grounding them in the education and like wisdom of our ancestors that we were farming a certain way, and now they have like, I don't know, people from the USDA come in and teach people how to grow. It's like we don't need to learn from these extension officers how to grow food. We can be doing that ourselves with the knowledge we always have had. And so, Aaron, I think that that's also so important for us to have a say in like the principles and values that we're rooted in and that are like motivating us to do the work that we're doing, and to have that as something we can always come back to and reference and like remind ourselves of why we are moving towards the vision that we are. And I would love for you to share like a story or practice that you already shared some practices, so maybe a story that has embodied the solidarity economy within your group.
Yeah, so what's coming to mind for us right now, one of our collective programs among the five organizations in the MHEC is a child care program, which I'm gonna just take a second to humble brag on us because we are providing free child care in a place where child care is like over $1,000 a month, you know what I'm saying? To specifically to Black women who are pregnant or postpartum. I don't know if y'all know, but because of COVID, there were a lot of restrictions on who could be in the birthing space, you know. But Austin is a transplant city. A lot of people there are away from home, away from their support system. And as a result, if they already have other kids, they may not necessarily have had anyone to watch them for them while they were giving birth, you know. And CPS was being called on people. So we started this program to combat that, and also to offer respite and care for moms postpartum. Even if this is your first child, everybody needs a break every now and then, or to be able to attend to themselves and their business. Or we also offer it for appointment-based care. Like if you need to go to the doctor, you need to take your new baby to the doctor, or if you need a therapy appointment, or if your doula needs to come see about you because you just had a baby. Like our child care program is there to meet all those needs. So, a story of how, because you know that's a practice, but a story of how this is solidarity economy was the formation of this program, where we had our it was like a community development day. We brought in all the MHEC members who are, you know, working at each of these organizations. We brought in doulas and birth workers and moms. And all these people came into a room and sat down, and like all day we just thought it out. We dreamed it up. We imagined it together collectively. And like now it has grown and iterated and become this beautiful thing that's functioning so well at this point.
I have a partner in East North Carolina when we were addressing food insecurity in another city in North Carolina, who was we had to build a food system that was primarily Black and Indigenous. And this brother, an elder, a mentor in some ways, logistics was is an issue in food. Like we oftentimes don't think about it. In some ways, it was highlighted during the pandemic. And you know, even though the pandemic isn't over, and the brother taught me this thing called down the river approach. that comes from the indigenous community he comes from. He's black and Tuscaroran. And he was saying, like, yeah, you don't gotta go everywhere to get the food. You just need one person that's headed this direction to drop it off with this person that's headed this direction, to drop it off to this person's headed in this direction. And eventually, like, all of it would get to us to where we needed it. And so it was like this, it was an indigenous form of logistics that was able to help us feed our people in the urban center, even though this food was coming from rural spaces all throughout North Carolina.
That's awesome. I just had to jump in and say that. That was so cool.
That is really cool. That's like a solidarity assembly line for food. I love that y'all are offering free childcare. That's so important. And that y'all had this community dreaming process made up of people that you're actually trying to serve. So that's really beautiful. I want to bring us back to BSEF, to the fund, and for you to share a little bit more about the regranting process and how you all manage that collectively.
Yeah, so one thing that stood out to me about the collective nature of this grant making process, which again, this is my very first experience with grant making, and also BSEF is my introduction to solidarity economy, as referred to as that way, you know. But something we did before we even started like looking necessarily at all the applications were, you know, decide on the base amount. But we came up with about like five prioritization areas to like, okay, you fit the base model and you were doing this and you were doing this other thing. We're gonna give you some more, you know. So yeah.
I do want to say, because I didn't shout out this farmer, that I don't want to be kind, talking about people's ingenuity without getting them. It was this farmer from Eastern North Carolina Farmer Collaborative. And I want to shout them out before, moving on to the thing. So no, I think what Aaron said is true. Like, just being clear on areas of priority and, like, really, it really does do us a great service. And I want us to do a better job of, like, somehow communicating out to the world, like, all the different wide spectrum of ways that people, black and indigenous people are practicing solidarity economy amongst themselves, right? Like, all these different things that, like, we would never think of. Like, I wouldn't think of logistics as a part of it, but, like, it is. Like, there ain't no economy without it, right? There's no economy. There ain't no economy without mothers. There ain't no economy without mothers. So we just don't think about all these components. And I think that that was really key too, in those prioritizations that Aaron is talking about, is, like, being able to say, like, no, like, these areas of you seeing these people with these, in some ways, with these identities, who are, like, triple, quadruple marginalized in certain areas, practicing, these different forms of economy when they're so heavily pressured by society to not even be a part of it, but also be exploited by it, is really keen to make sure that we're focusing on them, as we think about how we distribute that fund.
How did that feel to have that agency and to be on the side of being a grantee to then being a part of the grant choosing process?
For me, it was something I wanted to take really seriously, you know. Having had the experience of applying and, you know, trying to meet a need with a request, you know. But it felt really, it was bittersweet, honestly, because it was so awesome to be able to make as many grants as we did, to be able to, you know, put funds in the hands of people, especially like one of the prioritization areas where people with or groups rather with low overall organizational budgets. So this may have been like their first grant they may have ever received, or among the first. You know, they're still in initial stages trying to get off the ground. So being able to be like, yes, like, we see you, we see what you're doing, we value that, like, here's some help with that, was awesome. But saying no was so hard, like, because it's just, we can't give to everybody. I think if we had unlimited money, we would, but, you know, when we did have to come to those tough calls, that was tough.
In some ways, I felt a little imposter syndrome, because I felt like I wasn't supposed to be in that position. Because when you, and sometimes in, you know, I'm gonna get a little controversial here, but sometimes in nonprofit spaces, right? Like, communities on the ground, people on the ground doing the work are often not the ones who get to make those type of decisions. And so, you know, in imposter syndrome has a particular way of like hitting you where you like, well, man, like, am I responding to this power I've been given, and maybe I shouldn't be making these decisions, and maybe I, you know, and, you know, it's got this really interesting way of making you second guess yourself, even when a decision has to be made, and when you are like, no, like, if you shouldn't have been here, people wouldn't have invited you, you know? And so, yeah, I definitely felt that. And there were people in the space who had like way more experience that were there and with like the voice of reason in some ways. And we could ask questions like, you know, yeah, it was those tensions, you know what I mean?
Yes, I've definitely also felt the imposter syndrome, and it's like, yeah, it's like a strange feeling to have that power. And I would go through conversations in my head of like, well, if it's not me, then maybe it would be put in the hands of someone that doesn't care as much. And so that brought me ease to having that power. It's such a tension for me that we have to choose yeses and nos to things that are like essential for our well-being a lot of the times, and that there's this like, it just creates this sense of scarcity, that there aren't enough resources to go around. And so to then like possibly be the person that's affirming that for somebody else is like not, it's not a good feeling. How has plugging into this network empowered your solidarity economy organizing?
What comes to mind for me when you say that was meeting everybody who's part of BCEF that came to Oakland last year for our conference, and just seeing, like Jory has already mentioned today, how many different areas and sectors we're all in and still doing solidarity economy work. So just seeing like we have Black people doing solidarity economy work in the maternal health space, in the food space, in the energy space, in the environment space, you know, in education, in meeting basic needs, in housing. Like, we really got it all, y'all. Like, we really got it all. So knowing that there's this big network of people, especially when like there was a all grantee and like prospective grantee call in the fall last year, and just seeing that again, it's like, yeah, if we ever want to just link up and go on and just take over and just, you know, do our thing, I think we have all the people power to do so. And it makes me reflect on the people power that we're leaning into in like the MHEC space, which just puts me in the mind of a retreat we're planning right now and a biannual, that's twice a year, twice a year event that we hold for the community, which is a free baby shower. And we lean on people, like we're using their garages and everything. We're accepting donations from people who had babies or just want to, contribute by buying the things. And like we all meet up twice a year and like really push it in the community because people need help, but all these people may have your need right around the corner.
BCF has a retreat that grantees and folks are invited to, which we want to get more. There's one coming up soon that we're currently planning that I'm kind of a little involved with because it's gonna be not too far from where I'm at, and I'm kind of excited about that so I can get to show people what my spot, and I think just wanting more spaces where you can gather collectively, and like it in some ways it leaves a yearning for this space and this time because it's really important right now, and it's going to be really, really important next year, for us to like be together and be sharing with each other like strategies and concepts and like how can we actually be self-determined, because it's going to be really, really important for us to like to be able to do this for ourselves like Aaron's talked about, and I think that that's a possibility and that's hoping that
100%. We already have a holistic network to meet all of our needs. And we really just need to link up and talk and, like you said, strategize. And I'm wondering, what are some of the barriers to us weaving this network?
We are practicing the solidarity economy while living in a capitalist state. And so our time is commodified just by the nature of where we live. Like Joy was saying, you still got to pay bills. There's still things that you might have to do just to get through, you know what I'm saying? Until we get to that place where we're thriving without it being such a burden, to get there. So I feel like being able to all have the same time and space to have that link up, to come together, to meet and gather and strategize and do the work of pushing it forward. Like, first off, capitalism draining the mess out of us. Everybody tired, And especially if you're trying to do something alternative to the system, even just being part of the system tiring, but if you're doing that because you got to pay bills, but you're also trying to be alternative at the same time. That's a lot of energy. And then, still love on your family and drink water and touch grass and, all the other things you just need to do to be that. It's kind of a barrier.
Yeah, that deeply resonated with me. It's definitely a privilege to have time to dream and strategize. And I'm curious also to hear from both of you, what is the future you envision for having a robust solidarity economy for Black people?
You trying to get me in trouble. You trying to get me in trouble. I mean, I really want us to be decolonized. I want our communities and our children and our families and all of the like. And when I say that, I mean all, as the gender expansive as possible, right? I want all of us to be decolonized. And understand, like, the things that were handed to us or given to us, or the conditions we were put into, do not have to be the conditions in which we live out on a day-to-day basis. And how we see each other and how we care for each other, how we love each other, really be reflected in like something that's not rooted in, our oppression. And that goes down to like the foundation, whether it's food or whether it's, how we even classify what family is, how we classify what human is, all of those things, like really just, how we include ourselves in like, what is black, like even the understanding of the diaspora. So yeah, I really want to see us decolonize. And that's the safest answer I can give you without getting in trouble. You know what I mean?
Kind of piggybacking off of that, like picturing that as you were describing us decolonized, Jory, I'm seeing like Black people feeling free enough to be and do. And I just feel like I know so many people that have so many skills and talents, and that's not even what they do for a living, or that's just, they just throw down in the kitchen because that's just what they do and that makes them happy. But like, to your point of like the food industry, like that is supporting people's livelihood, like being alive. Like we all need to be able to eat, you know what I'm saying? Or like mothering and loving on people seems to come so naturally to the dudes I work with. And it's great that they found that work, but to be able to support them in a way where they can do that and they can do that for the community and for themselves. And there's no hint of like anyone feeling overburdened or overworked or like I have to keep going just because money is attached to this, So people being able to do their thing that they love doing, that they're passionate about, that comes naturally to them or whatever, that benefits all of us without it feeling in any way exploitative or like taking from the joy of actually carrying it out. And I feel like there are enough people doing enough things for us to eventually get there, but
Yes, I wanted to reiterate what you said, Jory, about the conditions we currently have is not what we have to live on a day-to-day basis. Times will change. We need to dream it up and practice it. And like you said, Aaron, like no more doing shit just because we feel like we have to in order to survive. I really, really hope that in our lifetime we do not have to do that anymore. And I also want you all to share some practical ways that we can nurture this vision that you all are describing.
what comes to mind for me is like sharing and resting. So I think these are things like you don't have to have an organization to do that, right? Like in your everyday life, even thinking of like that downriver principle that Jory was talking about, it makes me think of my grandma. That's kind of what she would do. Like she's living in Arkansas and has friends who grow stuff, or and in her network of friends, she just delivers food to people just because she knows all of them and she was going to see them anyway. So might as well, or I'm gonna take these clothes from this friend so her grandkids can have something to wear, just whatever, And I think we all do that probably to some extent without thinking about it, but having some intentionality behind it, all of us collectively, that would, just look around. Like you probably were gonna get rid of some stuff anyways, or you got too much of something, or you might have a need over here that again, somebody down the street might be able to fill. But also rest, like it's not gonna be sustainable, it's not gonna be genuine, it's not gonna be any of those things if we're tired and we're doing it from a place of like begrudgingness and, you know, feeling like we have to, or just, you know, on our, just at our wit's end and doing it, you know, like take time to rest. And we're talking about Trisha Hersey and rest is resistance right now. And it's very anti-capitalist to believe that you're not a machine, you're a human, and rest is an inherent right. And it's something that you need, you know what I'm saying, to be able to thrive. So being able to do that, so you feel the energy and the love and the power to be able to do all that sharing, I think is really important.
I think for me, one of the most, well, there's so many different components of it for me, like knowing where I come from. It's like knowing, like asking the question, and sometimes, you know, there's different reasons why we might not necessarily be tied to like our ancestry, you know, genealogically, like, or genetically, but that doesn't, you know, when we talk about communities, we're not talking about your DNA, because a lot of your culture is given to you by the people who you spend a lot of time with. So just like knowing you and your community and the history of that space and who those people are and where they came from, I think that's a practice that really, really like put me on this journey. And also another one is like just trying to rebuild my relationship with the world around me, with nature. You know, I think one of the most devastating things that colonization ever did to African people was to create a separation between them and Mother Earth. And so, you know, we are stewards, we are lovers of Mother Earth. And there's so many different indigenous names for her in West Africa that we have lost, and almost in all of them, she's the primary focus of our moral and our ethical lens. So I really think that that's pretty much the thing that I would say.
Yes, to all of that. I think that our severed connection to the earth is what a lot of destruction stems from. And also like this idea that there is scarcity, because in nature it is very abundant. And yeah, we need to go back to the practices of just like resting in nature. And we are owed time back. So we definitely shouldn't feel guilty about our rest and rejuvenation. So thank y'all so much for sharing your wisdom and for the amazing and necessary work that you're doing. There are many ways you can be in reciprocity with us. If you are or know of a collective model that aligns, let's connect so we can spotlight the story. Share episodes, especially with your friends and family who aren't aware of collective models but are unfulfilled with this economy. With your support, we can continue archiving the stories that aren't being elevated but are necessary for our collective elevation.